Thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK Sunrise. Mark Lawrence here. Mr. Rob Center is always the fabulous producer, and he's doing fabulosity even as we speak, so we appreciate that. And Matt Catrillo's over in the newsroom. In the studio with us now, Dr. Chris Martin from Bucknell University is back. He used to be the only botanist I knew, so I am very glad to say that now I know another one, but thank you for coming back.
Good morning.
You remember him from Plants Are Cool Too, and he's the David Burpee Chair in Plant and Genetics and Research at Bucknell University. He's the director of the Manning Herbarium at Bucknell. So thanks for coming
sure.
in.
Yeah, hello.
I'm going to ask you about the latest video in a moment.
Sounds good.
But you brought one of your peers and colleagues with you. Dr. Angela McDonald is here. She's a Bucknell professor of biology. She, too, is a botanist. She's the Burpee postdoctoral fellow at Bucknell. And you're both going to tell us about the discovery of a new plant. And you wrote the paper on it, right?
Yeah, we're just wrapping it up now.
All right. Well, welcome aboard. Thank you so much for coming in. Tell us about this idea of writing a paper, how that subjects your research and your findings to peer review, and that's a pivotal point in plant research and coming up with new information.
Yeah, so what we did is we thought we had something new. We went out in the field and did a bunch of studies with it, grew some plants, and then along with some students and some of the other collaborators, we wrote a paper together. When that was done, we submitted it for peer review, and we actually just got our reviews back 2 days ago, and it was three different people sent us a lot of comments and their feedback and critiques, and we're incorporating that feedback now.
To whom do you submit a paper of this nature, Chris?
Yeah, so to a scientific journal, and this particular journal is called PhytoKeys. It's a journal that publishes mostly new species descriptions from all around the world. And like all scientific journals, just as Angela described, you got to put yourself through the peer review process in order to get published in those venues.
And you found a new species?
We did, yeah. We were in the field about a year ago today in the outback of Australia, and that's when we made sort of the final collections of this rare bush tomato species, a relative of wild eggplants that we kind of knew was something different, and we've spent a lot of time since then working that out, and Angela sort of led the charge on that, so that paper describing that brand new species will be out soon.
Solanum?
That's right.
Plastisexum?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Where'd you get that name? Or well, that maybe somebody else gave you that name.
Well, Chris had a large role in helping us come up with that name, but the name refers to the way the flowers present themselves and how they were difficult to classify and to understand by botanists who had collected that species only twice before. And so the flowers, the way that they have their parts, their sexual parts, is variable depending on the time of year and other things.
What if they call it the McDonald tomato or something? I mean, if you help discover it.
It's a little tacky to name a plant after yourself.
Oh, so
it's
you guys
frowned
don't,
upon.
Botanists don't do that?
No. It's one of those things that, you'd sort of be ostracized a bit from the community if you named it after yourself. But you could name it after other people, and we've done that in the past, too. Some of the species we've described in the last few years we've named after other botanists.
All right, well, the common name, and this is likely to stick, is the Dungawan bush tomato?
Yeah, that's correct. So the Dungawan is a large cattle station in Australia, and that's where most of the collections have been made. And a cattle station is something like what we would call a ranch, but they're much larger than most ranches
now,
here.
This plant looks like a certain type of plant. How do you really know it's different than all the other ones?
Well, we are studying its closest relatives, and we know that based on a family tree that we've generated. And we did a lot of different measurements of about 30 different traits and did a bunch of statistics to try to figure out which of those are statistically significantly different from others. And that kind of helped us decide. We had this gut feeling it was really different, and we knew it was different in our hearts. But we did some science, we did some math, and we worked it out.
Yes. Yeah, and some DNA, right? So
and
we also
DNA.
Were able to compare its DNA to some of the things that we had around that we knew what they were, and that helped us understand that this was something that hadn't been described before. So we went to it.
All right.
Science and math.
So a new plant. Now, was this plant always in existence, or did it evolve recently? Do we know that?
Well, it depends on your perspective, really. There's the species we study in Australia, these wild eggplants of the outback, seem to have arrived in Australia somewhere around 3 to 4 million years. Three million years ago. So that's a long time in sort of our individual lives, but sort of in the scheme of evolutionary time, that's not that long, right? So this one particular thing has probably been around for a while, maybe on the order of maybe hundreds of thousands of years or even a couple million, but just scientists hadn't described it and given it a name.
Is this your first new plant? Because I know it's not his.
No, it's not, actually. I think it's my third.
Wow, this is and how significant is that? You know, our audience is probably like, oh, wow, new plant. Okay, big deal. Well, I got 1,000 dandelions here. I'm sure there's one that's different or something like that. But really, I looked online at some of the journals and so on. You know, you guys are being talked about. This is a big deal.
Yeah, well, it is a big deal. And it's really important that species that aren't well known to most people are given names, because if we don't have a name for plants, just like if we didn't have a name for you, we'd have a hard time talking about you and a hard time conserving it and making sure that people know what exists in the world.
Yeah, hard to protect something if you can't talk about it, right? And you can't communicate about it. So giving something a name is a really important first step in protecting it and its habitat and all the things it shares that habitat with. So.
All right, and for the skeptics in our audience who are saying, so what?
Uh-huh.
You say what? You alluded to protecting.
Yep.
I know medicine is the first thing a lot of big thinkers think about here. So what?
Yeah, I mean, our species may or may not have economic importance. We're really not sure. But I think that, if you think about sort of the broader scheme of things, if we're protecting cool plants, then we're protecting cool habitats. We're protecting the functions of those ecosystems where they live. And so we're sort of assigning value to a place, right? And then if we can protect that place, we can, benefit from that.
Your view on the sort of the so what?
Yeah, I mostly agree. I also think,
you disagree with him?
No, I don't disagree with him.
Okay.
I do agree.
Mostly.
I search for conflict wherever I can find it. I'm sorry.
Looking for the controversy.
Right. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I mostly agree. I think it's just really important that we know what exists and that we can conserve it.
Okay, so one of the things that you guys talk about is science evangelism, this idea that it isn't an accident that plants are cool too. The videos are wildly popular among people who have a passing interest in this. You try to spread the word about science wherever possible, like on the Sunrise Show, and have you been in the videos yet? Have you been in one?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, you will be. I know that's to be true, because he has all kinds of smart experts on there on the different topics. So, science evangelism, tell us about this idea of constantly harping on the fact that knowledge is power and science rocks, really.
Yeah, well, I think science communication it's really important. Just like we are here, we need to get people that are doing cool and interesting things out in the public so that people know about it. And that's one way to make your work relevant and to try to tie it to the lives of everyday people in the community. Here we are in central Pennsylvania talking about a plant we found in Australia. It's pretty interesting, pretty cool.
All right. The last time he was here, I talked to him about science, STEM, and women and girls and getting females involved in this. Fortunately, now we get to meet a woman who's a botanist. So do you keep that in the back of your mind, perhaps, this idea that you want to nurture young learners and maybe young girls?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, there are real issues that women face and people of all abilities and genders and what have you face in science in general. And I'm really proud to say right now we have a lab full of, I believe it's all women researchers in the lab right now.
Yeah, so. I saw a picture of your lab recently, and it was mostly women. In fact, the particular image I saw didn't happen to have any men in it.
Yeah. Well,
you're
I was probably
the
taking
camera,
a picture, yeah.
Okay. You're allowed in to take pictures, then get out.
Yeah. That wasn't really intentional. It just kind of happened that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, right? Yeah. I mean, it's where we are taking people who are really interested in exploring and discovering and learning things and doing some hardcore science, and you know, who these people are in terms of their identity. It just happens to be who they are.
Mm-hmm. So a year ago, you were in the Australian bush researching, trying to find plants. When you found this particular plant, did you say, oh my gosh, this is new? Or did you just, what happened at that moment?
Well, at the time, we kind of knew it might be a new thing based on some specimens that were collected by Chris and his team that was in Australia in 2016. And then they had generated some molecular data in 2017 using some of those samples, which I analyzed last year. And we kind of knew that it was genetically distinct. And then based on the pictures that we had, I was like, well, it looks like it's probably morphologically distinct as well. And so we had a good idea going into it that it was new. And then it was kind of confirmed in the field again, like, oh, yeah, this thing is definitely different.
All right. And what does a botanist yell when they say eureka?
Yeah, something like eureka.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we are yelling holy tomato or something like that.
Nice
or like,
tomato.
You know, woo, we found it, but really loud, a lot louder than that.
Okay, yeah, nobody can hear us, well, so we can yell as loud as we want out there.
Yeah. I hope so. You're out there with, what, the kangaroos and
Pretty much, maybe. A dingo.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we're right in the middle of, I think, an interesting interview with Dr. Angela McDonald is here. She's just recently wrapping up her PhD. She is a Bucknell professor of biology. She's a Burpee postdoctoral fellow at Bucknell, and she's talking about the co-discovery. Is that the right wording I would use? The co-discovery of yet another new plant, third one in her resume, and you're up to about a half a dozen or so.
Sure, somewhere around there.
Plant.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, who's keeping track? Dr. Chris Martin is well here, Bucknell professor of biology. We met him a year ago talking about plants are cool, too. And we are going to ask about the latest video and keep talking about this science evangelism and encouragement of all ages of people to monitor what's going on in our plant world. I got to find out some more about common milkweed, right? That's what
I can ask
you about. All right. Well, that is Dr. McDonald's specialty. So I'm going to find out more about that shortly. But we'll continue this discussion at 7:40 this morning.
Politics, sports, entertainment? Yeah, we've got that. It's WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Dr. Angela McDonald is here. She's working at Bucknell University. She's one of their Burpee postdoctoral fellows. Now, we're talking about the discovery of yet another new species of plants that can be partly attributed to some of the science people at Bucknell University. We're talking about the importance of new discoveries, and Dr. Chris Martin is with her here today on the show. He's a Bucknell professor of biology. He's the Plants Are Cool Too star, I guess, it's producer star, but it's certainly not a project you do alone, right?
That's true, yeah. I hire real professionals, real video professionals, Paul Frederick and Tim Kramer.
Yeah, if you haven't gone to YouTube and seen Plants Are Cool Too, you're missing it. Just a wide range of discoveries. We saw you hanging off the Shikonui Bluffs here in one video, and what was it, New Zealand or Australia for another one? You go around the world?
Just recently we were shooting new episodes in Hawaii, which is a pretty awesome place.
And
it's
how
rough
many
for me to have to go there?
How many views you getting on these videos?
You know, we're in the hundreds of thousands of views across the series. We have something like 10 episodes at this point on our channel on YouTube. Plants Are Cool Too, and they get a lot of views in schools, which is for me the most satisfying thing. They're really geared toward K through 12, but university level stuff. So they get used a lot.
And science evangelism is important.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of world out there to discover, and a lot of things left to be known, and a lot of things left to protect and take care of, and the more of us that know these things, the better.
Yeah, we alluded to this earlier, this idea of spreading the word about discoveries and conservation, critically important. Angela.
Yeah, it is really important, and I think that there's a lot of different ways that scientists are kind of getting the word out, so being on the radio, posting to their blog, posting on their website, making YouTube videos, podcasts. I feel like there are a lot of scientists now doing lots of different podcasts and doing all kinds of different things to kind of spread the word about their science, so different forms of science communication.
And what happens when you're successful at this? Plants get protected, more discoveries made, universities supported?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the university support and support from other financial institutions or places that grant funding to scientists, like the National Science Foundation and like more local organizations that have grants.
So everything we need to know about plants, we don't yet know yet, right? We don't know everything yet.
We definitely don't. I think that the harder that you look at anything, the more that you'll discover that you don't know. And then you become aware of what you don't know, and that gives you research ideas.
And so when we're drilling down into stuff we don't know, what are we doing? I mean, we're looking at the DNA. We're looking at how plants interact with each other. What don't we know yet?
Yeah, well, we're definitely looking at the DNA. So with this new species that we've been talking about, we definitely started with DNA. But we also know that morphology, or the way the plant appears, like the shape of the leaves or the way the corolla or the plant, the flowers look, that's really important too, as well as the ecology and the distribution. You know, where does the plant occur? What plants does the new plant occur with? Things like that.
And you used protection when you first started on this segment last time.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier about, it's hard to protect the special things in the world if we don't know they're there. And one of the ways that we can recognize that they exist is by finding them and giving them a name. And then we as humans can talk about them, right? And then we can develop plans to protect them and protect their habitats. And, there's a lot of world out there that could do with some protection, right? And in the end, it really benefits us as a species.
Are there any plants who aren't threatened? Which aren't threatened?
Yeah, sure. There's lots of things, right? I mean, you've had people on talking about invasive plant species right here in our region, right? So there are plants that are doing really well, whether we help them or not. But what we are finding is that there's a large percentage of plants that are already sort of naturally rare that are on the decline. And, we often don't know how important they are to the function of the whole system that they're a part of until they're gone, right? And so I think it behooves us to go out there and find these things and learn as much as we can about them, or else we could lose them without ever knowing what their role was in the system.
All right, Dr. McDonald, you did a lot of work on milkweed. Tell me about some of this research. Common milkweed like we see around here?
Yeah, so I worked on, as a graduate student, I recently finished my PhD at Oklahoma State University, working on milkweed relatives. So not necessarily the ones that grow around here, but I do happen to know quite a bit about the ones that grow around here because my advisor was or is the expert on that group. But the common milkweed around here, I would say, mostly is one of those species that doesn't totally need a lot of protection. So it's pretty common. It's especially abundant all over the highways. You can see it in the fall here in fruit.
Okay, and it mostly grows in wet areas, so it should be a pretty happy plant around here these days. So, but in the southern U.S. and other places, milkweed's pivotal for the monarch population. So sort of look at the U.S. in general. Is that plant threatened elsewhere? And tell us a little bit about the monarch tie-in.
Yeah, so I would say that common milkweed is not necessarily super threatened throughout the U.S., but there are a lot of species of milkweeds that are a lot less rare, some of which are threatened, and a lot of those are hosts to the monarch butterfly. And so those two species, the milkweed and the monarch, have co-evolved, and so the monarch larvae are hatched on milkweed, and they eat the milkweed, and they actually are able to sequester the poison from the milkweed in their bodies and use that as a secondary defense against birds or things that might want to eat the monarch later.
Get out of here.
No, it's true. And then the milkweeds are also a really important nectar source in the fall. So after the monarch becomes a butterfly, the butterflies need lots of nourishment to get back to Mexico or to the Caribbean, wherever they're going to overwinter. And they use the nectar from milkweeds that flower later in the season in the southern U.S., for example, as a nectar source. So,
get back to the poison.
The poison?
Tell me about this.
So milkweeds in general are very toxic plants.
So I can't eat them, right?
You shouldn't eat them, no. So milkweed's one of the more better known components of their latex. So if you break a milkweed, it's milky, and that's kind of where the common names come from. But that latex is the white stuff that comes out, and it has a lot of chemicals in it that are really bad for you. One of them is are known as cardenolides, and those, if you consume them in kind of any large quantity, can stop your heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing. So it's amazing that the monarchs can eat the milkweed and have it not stop their heart. If another insect that isn't adapted to eating that chemical ate it, they would surely not
and
survive.
So the monarch takes in this substance, this latex, and then if somebody eats the monarch, they get sick or die?
Yeah, yeah. So to other predators, monarch caterpillars and monarchs themselves are a very toxic snack.
And the predators learn this?
Yes, yeah. Okay. And there's actually other species that have evolved and learned to mimic the appearance of monarch butterflies. So they don't feed on milkweed, but they're coloration and patterns in their bodies have been selected for because they mimic the way monarchs look, and they are able to not get eaten.
Because nobody wants to get sick out there.
Yeah, because the predators are like, oh, I don't know if that's a monarch or not.
I guess I shouldn't be so fascinated. I mean, species make each other sick all the time, and so we avoid them.
Yeah, yeah. This is an incredible story, though, right? This is the sort of thing that, like, you know, we teach students about, and mm-hmm. it's just an amazing connection among species. And the mimicry is just incredible, right? That there are butterflies that pretend to be monarchs so they don't get eaten. That's just amazing. Nature's incredible.
Well, it's like almost like a human trait, you know. I might pretend to be a really tough guy at a bar to avoid conflict or something like that. All right, so you are doing a lot of this kind of outreach. The stuff that I find fascinating, you're putting into Plants Are Cool Too.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got this video series that the idea is to highlight cool plants and the dynamic scientists who study them. And so we make these videos. We travel around the world and find the botanists where they are working and where they are among some of the coolest plants on Earth. And it's been a lot of fun.
What's next? I mean, we saw you on the Shikellamy Bluffs, and we saw you at the AOAA around here.
That's right.
What else?
Yeah, the Hawaiian trip was really to go look at the rarest plants of Hawaii and the stresses that they're facing. Hawaii, we think of as sort of this tropical paradise, and it really is, but it's also heavily impacted by the thing we mentioned earlier, invasive species, both plants and lots of animals. So we went out there to look at these rare plants that 20 years ago were already considered rare, and we went to places where we thought for sure we'd find them, and most of them were gone. They'd been eaten by goats and pigs and other introduced animals, and overtaken by introduced invasive plants. So it's an incredible paradise of amazing, rich biodiversity that is in steep decline.
All right. We will see you this summer at various conferences and so on. Both of you explain what you'll be up to.
Yeah, yeah. We're headed, as a lab group, we're headed to three different national science conferences this summer. I'm going to be taking a group of students to the Botany Conference in Tucson, Arizona. We have a grad student going to the Ecology Conference in Louisville. And
I'll be going to the Evolution Conference, which is in Providence, Rhode Island this year. June.
Yeah. So we'll see you out and about.
Sure, everybody. We'll see everybody there at those scientific conferences.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I'll be there. Holy smokes, I wouldn't miss one. And you're doing research on the blue false indigo?
Yeah, our student, master's student, Cheyenne Moore, is working on a really important conservation genetics project with the blue false indigo to try to understand whether the populations here are connected to the populations that occur outside of Pennsylvania, and whether or not they're genetically distinct and warrant additional conservation measures within the state.
Yeah, this is a plant that people probably have in their garden, often called Baptisia. It's a tall perennial thing with some really nice pea-like flowers on it. And even though it's common in cultivation, it's actually pretty rare in the state of Pennsylvania. So we have a student that's on the case.
Okay, and you're studying primarily in the Lehigh Valley, I recall, is your description.
Yeah, Allegheny. Yeah.
Where can I get more information? Just go to bucknell.edu, poke around under the McDonnell, M-C-D-O-N-N-E-L-L, or...
Sure, yeah, you can find me through the Bucknell Biology web stuff, and also Plants Are Cool Too. YouTube channel, but Angela's got a great website.
Yeah, I have a website. It's AngelaJMcD.com.
All right, Angela J. McD, just the letter D, and that's the end of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, fabulous. Well, thank you both so much for all you're doing. Thanks for spreading the word. I hope some young people are listening and pick up these clues and continue.
Yeah, we need more scientists. So we were just, you know, little kids, just like lots of kids out there right now, and now we're scientists, and it was almost that easy, right, Angela?
Almost.
From looking at the burpee catalog as children to being burpee scholars, how about that?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Dr. Chris Martin and Dr. Angela McDonald from Bucknell University.